Hello, this is Ian Berg with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper, first with the article, Virus Concerns Prompt Changes at Courthouse, a release for the commercial news, Danville. Vermilion County Circuit Court Presiding Judge Thomas M. O'Shaughnessy announced Tuesday that the judiciary in Vermilion County will make changes in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. According to a news release, judges have been monitoring responses to COVID-19 and following guidance provided by state and local public health agencies and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. This is an evolving situation with daily, if not hourly, changes. The Illinois Supreme Court recommended courts avoid large gatherings and practice social distancing, and advised all courts that non-essential in-person court proceedings may pose a risk to participants, court staff, and the public. Courts have been authorized to avoid risk by rescheduling court events to a later date, especially jury trials and large docket calls, or by conducting proceedings via telephone or video remote appearance where possible. The Rita B. Garman Vermilion County Courthouse performs essential governmental and judicial functions and operations, and, accordingly, must remain open for business. But beginning March 18th, it will do so with limitations and restrictions. In the release, O'Shaughnessy said, "Out of an abundance of caution and concern for the health and well-being of the citizens of Vermilion County, and consistent with the recommendations of the Illinois Supreme Court, as well as the County Health Department, many of the civil and criminal cases in Vermilion County will be postponed and suspended beginning on Wednesday, March 18th, 2020, and continuing through Friday, April 17th, 2020. Essential proceedings will still occur, but in a manner consistent with a policy of mitigating the impact of COVID-19. We are attempting to keep the courts available to the fullest extent, but remain cognizant of the need to secure public safety." An administrative order entered by O'Shaughnessy restricts access to the courthouse. If a person has traveled to China, Italy, Iran, Japan, or South Korea, or any other place to which travel restrictions have been placed by agencies of the federal government within the last 21 days, resides or has had close contact with someone who has traveled to one of those areas within the last 21 days, has been asked to self-quarantine by any hospital, clinic, physician, or health agency, or has been in contact with anyone who has been diagnosed with COVID-19, or has flu-like symptoms, including fever, cough, or shortness of breath, he or she must not enter the courthouse. Instead, they should telephone the court administrator at 217-554-7830 for instructions. The administrative order also ensures a judge will be available during all regular business hours to hear matters determined by the court as emergencies or essential. The administrative order continues and postpones all hearings scheduled through April 17th in the following categories of cases, and the parties are directed not to appear. These are non-emergency civil matters, including civil jury trials, law magistrate, including evictions, small claims, miscellaneous remedy, including expungements, probates, chancery, including mortgage foreclosures, adoption, domestic relations, family and child support cases, tax, some felony matters, including jury trials for defendants who are not in custody and who have not demanded a speedy trial. Defendants are advised to contact their attorney to confirm the status of their hearings. Traffic, misdemeanor, conservation violation, ordinance violation, juvenile abuse, neglect, and dependency, JA, except as outlined below. Juvenile delinquency, except as outlined below. All hearings in these cases are continued to a date to be authorized by the judge presiding over the division, and notice will be sent to the last known address of each party. Litigants are directed to ensure that their mailing address on file with the circuit clerk is updated and current. Attorneys and litigants should also monitor cases rescheduled on the county's website at vermilioncounty.org. Matters determined by the court to be emergencies will be heard in person or by telephone conference on a case-by-case basis. Attorneys and self-represented litigants should contact the court administrator for purposes of requesting the scheduling of an emergency matter. Pendings in all civil cases, including motions and agreed orders, may continue to be e-filed in the manners consistent with Supreme Court rules. The following court proceedings and hearings will be held as scheduled, with appearances expected for all litigants, unless the travel or health appearance restrictions apply, all of which are deemed essential matters. All bail and bond review hearings and arraignments. Hearings related to violations of supervision and probation for in-custody defendants. Subpoena returns for in-custody defendants. Other criminal law matters with the defendant in custody at the discretion of the judge presiding over the division. Criminal felony jury trials for defendants in custody and/or who have filed speedy trial demands. Special courts such as drug, mental health, and veterans courts. Grand jury proceedings. Motions including statutory summary suspension. Juvenile shelter care and detention hearings. And adjudicationary hearings for in-custody minors, mental health hearings, petitions for emergency and plenary orders of protection, stalking and no-contact orders, civil no-contact orders, emergency hearings on family matters as scheduled by the court administrator after approval of the judge presiding over the division. Defendants may continue to enter into plea agreements to conclude their cases. For jury service, trial by jury is a constitutional right, and as such, the court system cannot function without juries. The court shall, however, minimize the need for jurors to be summoned to the courthouse. While some jurors will still be summoned, reducing the number summoned will create a less congested environment and increase the personal space available for summoned jurors. A juror summoned for jury service who is experiencing acute respiratory illness symptoms, flu-like symptoms, fever, or are coughing or sneezing, should contact the jury commission coordinator on weekdays between 8:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. at 217-554-7845 and report these symptoms. Jury duty service will be deferred to a later date. For probation, a plan has been implemented by the Director of Probation Services, Tom Gregory, to limit in-person contacts and suspend certain large group meetings. Probation officers will contact clients to schedule meetings, which will be held by telephone conversation. Probationers deemed high risk may still be required to report to their probation officers in person. Traffic tickets. The public should be reminded that certain traffic tickets may still be paid by mail, online, or at the circuit clerk's window. For information, call 217-554-7720. Courthouse events and travel. All scheduled courthouse trainings, educational events, and non-essential travel are canceled until further notice. State Attorney's Office and Public Defender's Office. These offices will remain open, but will be subject to the determination by the state's attorney and the public defender regarding face-to-face appointments. Juvenile detention. The detention center may implement emergency visitation and transport procedures for minors held at the detention center in order to minimize potential exposure to COVID-19. Non-essential personnel and visitors may be denied access to the facility to ensure the health and safety of minors, detainees, and detention center staff. Marriages and civil unions. The court will continue to perform marriage and civil union ceremonies at the courthouse. However, only the two individuals being married or joining in a civil union are permitted to attend the ceremony. Additional people, including family and friends, will be denied access to the courthouse and not allowed to attend the ceremony. Now we'll go to the article, Council Approves Emergency Ordinance, by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. As aldermen and others left the Danville City Council chambers Tuesday night, no one was certain when they'd see each other again in session. The city council meeting started off like it usually does, with a prayer and a pledge of allegiance after the council roll call. The invocation was by Reverend Daniel Offit, Danville Rescue Mission Director. Offutt said the mission fits into a gray area by not receiving state funding. So with city agreement, the shelter will remain open for meals and housing for those in need. He said they were separating tables and taking precautions with the coronavirus. "We won't turn anyone away," Offutt said. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. also said these are unprecedented times with the pandemic health situation. Williams asks residents to check on neighbors, especially those who are elderly and suffering financially. "I just ask you to be good neighbors now more than ever," he said. As other cities are doing, the City Council approved an ordinance in response to gubernatorial and presidential declarations, with the COVID-19 outbreak being a national public health emergency. The declaration of local state of emergency COVID-19 allows Williams certain extraordinary powers by executive order for the interests of the public and its safety. They include conducting any regular or special City Council meeting via electronic means, including audio or video conference, to conduct needed city business in an emergency meeting, canceling meetings of any board or commission to which the mayor appoints members, suspending of licenses or permits for special events, approving previously apportioned expenditures of the city for the purpose of continuing the operations of the municipality, adjusting personnel policies related to time leave, other benefits or terms and conditions of employment as are reasonable related to providing sufficient staffing during the term of the local state of emergency, entering into such temporary agreements, including memoranda of understanding with the city's bargaining units, in order to promote the provision of city services and the health and safety of the public and employees during the local state of emergency, closing city facilities as is reasonable required to protect the health of the public and employees of the city, authorizing the city's corporation council to extend deadlines for payments related to any amounts owed by the city, including city ordinance violations, and delegating such powers to the emergency interim successor, who may take such actions as are provided herein. William said the language is limiting in the power it gives him as mayor, and it does not, for example, allow him to close liquor stores or suspend gun and ammunition sales. The declaration is in effect for up to 35 days, or until the adjournment of the next regular or special meeting of the City Council, whichever comes first, unless sooner termination by a proclamation of the mayor or his or her interim emergency successor, indicating that the civil emergency no longer exists. The mayor or his interim successor shall have the power to re-proclaim, extend the existence of an emergency at the end of each 35-day period during the time said emergency exists. The ordinance went into effect on March 17th. Williams said he doesn't like emergency powers, but wants to keep the city government running and serving the people. Danville Information Systems Administrator Angel Da Silva will work with aldermen to make sure they are set up electronically for any called meeting. Williams recommended the council not have a public services committee meeting next week, and the following week is a fifth Tuesday when there is no regular city council meeting scheduled. In other business, council members voted 8-3, with Ward 3 Alderman R.J. Javis voting present, and Alderman Dan Duncheon and Robert Williams absent, to amend the zoning ordinance and map to approve a special use permit requested by Aqua Illinois and Soul Systems for 1300 West Fairchild Street, zoned AG Agriculture, for a large ground solar energy system. Alderman heard again from a number of neighbors against the project being in a residential neighborhood and how it wasn't a substantial petition change from when it was previously presented, and the council voted against it last year. We'll now go to the death notices. Franklin Stokes, 91, of Danville, passed away on Sunday, March 15th. Per his wishes, he will have a graveside service at 2:30 p.m. on Friday, March 20th, at Forest Park Cemetery in Georgetown. John Francis Big John Jones, Jr., 85, of Danville, passed away on Monday, March 16th. Open visitation hours for the public will be 8 a.m. to noon on Thursday, March 19th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. A private celebration of life service will follow. Burial will take place at Greenwood Cemetery. On March 13, 2020, Suraprabha Kumari Guruajal passed away. A visitation with the family to celebrate her life will be 5 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, March 18th at Howe and Yaki Funeral Home in Shelbyville, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, the family asks you to make donations to the ALS Foundation of Chicago. Also welcome are donations to careindia.org to educate girls in rural India, or KIND through UNICEF USA to build desks for students in Africa. Esther W. Trevor, 104, died in Freedom House at the Danville, Illinois VA on March 12, 2020. There will be a graveside service at 1 p.m. on Thursday, March 19th at Atherton Cemetery on Perrysville Road in Danville. Connie Lynn Nail, 64, of Lafayette, Indiana, passed away on March 14th. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Friday, March 20th at Soller Baker Funeral Home in Lafayette, Indiana. In lieu of flowers, those wishing may contribute to Almost Home Humane, an animal shelter in Lafayette. Catherine Marie Metz Blackford, 92, of Danville, passed away on March 14th. There will be private family services followed by a burial at Sunset Memorial Park and Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Betty Carol Gocking, 82, of Hoopston, died on March 17, 2020. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time. We'll return now to the front page, this time for the article, Voters Reject School Tax, Briggs Wins GOP Nomination for County Auditor, by Carol Rome, Danville. For the second time in 2 years, city and county voters defeated a 1% countywide increase in the sales tax rate to benefit area school districts. The 1% county school facility tax garnered a narrow margin of support with Vermilion County voters Tuesday, who cast 4,212 yes votes, or 50.47%, to 4,133 no votes, or 49.53%. Voters in the city of Danville, however, voted down the measure that would have increased Danville's sales tax rate to 10.25%. Danville voters cast 1,343 yes votes, or 34%, to 2,259 no votes, or 59%. The total city and county votes on the sales tax issue was 5,555 yes to 6,392 no, a difference of 837 votes. In the 2 years since the sales tax issue last came before Danville and Vermilion County voters, the law that allows a county school facility tax to be levied has been amended to expand how that sales tax revenue can be used. In addition to school improvements, the sales tax revenue could also have been used to pay school security and mental health services. Westville Superintendent Seth Miller and Salt Fork Superintendent Phil Cox both said they believed the coronavirus precautions were a factor that prevented more voters from turning out to the polling places and voting in support of the tax. Miller said that although he believed there was more awareness of the sales tax issue and how the additional revenue could have benefited county schools, he said he couldn't help but wonder the effect the coronavirus precautions had on voter turnout. "It's unprecedented what we're dealing with," he said. "It's so hard to underestimate all the anxiety and precautions that have rolled out since last Thursday. I'm sure it impacted every issue on the ballot." Preparing for elections is always hard work, but no one anticipated the reality we faced over the past week, he said. "Of course, we are disappointed in the outcome. Over the next few months, we'll try to figure out the impact the coronavirus crisis has had on our election. But right now, we need to focus on what is most important, the safety of our kids and families here in Vermilion County," Miller said. I can assure you that all school districts are going to do everything in their power to keep our kids safe. I urge everyone in our county to take whatever steps that must be taken to remain safe and to help neighbors if needed. Cox said he was pleased that all 7 precincts in the Salt Fork School District passed the sales tax measure by 62%, which was a larger margin than 2 years ago. Overall, though, Cox said he was disappointed that voters did not approve the 1% county sales tax. We'll have to take a long, hard look at our projects, he said. We have a really large heating project, and we would love to have air conditioning in the school someday. We will have to make decisions in the best interests of the district and in the best interests of the taxpayers, Cox said. Prior to Tuesday's primary, 56 of 102 counties in Illinois currently assess a county school facility tax, including Champaign, Edgar, and Douglas counties in central Illinois. The Illinois Department of Revenue would direct the county school facility tax dollars, which would have generated a total of $5.4 million annually, to the Vermilion County Regional Office of Education, where it would then be distributed to the local school districts. Had local voters approved the county school facility tax, Danville District 118 stood to benefit the most by receiving about $2.5 million in revenue each year. That's because the amount of money a school district would have received would have been based on its student enrollment. Estimates of how much new revenue would have been received annually by other school districts were: Armstrong Township High School, $42,000; Armstrong Ellis, $31,000; Bismarck Henning, $273,000; Georgetown Ridge Farm, $418,000; Hoopston Area, $433,000; Oakwood, $449,000; Potomac, $73,000; Rossville Elvin, $138,000; Salt Fork, $408,000; and Westville, $602,000. Miller said Tuesday's defeat of the sales tax measure was an indication to him that voters do not want to change the way area public schools are funded. We asked them, "Are you happy with the system we have now that relies on property tax to fund our schools?" He said, "We had the opportunity to take the pressure off." In Vermilion County's only contested primary contest, Erica Briggs won the Republican nomination for the county auditor over Mary Tetteau. Briggs, 26, won in both the city and county precincts. Unofficial totals showed Briggs with 875 votes in the city precincts and 3,106 ballots in the county, to Tetteau's 765 votes in the city and 2,320 votes in the county. The preliminary total had Briggs at 3,981 and Tetteau with 3,085. Incumbent auditor Bill Wright is not seeking re-election. No Democratic candidate ran in Tuesday's primary. Vote totals were not available for the entire 15th congressional district, where U.S. Representative John Shimkus decided not to seek re-election. In Vermilion County, Erica Weaver led the four Democratic candidates with an unofficial total of 2,205 votes. She was followed by Kevin Morton with 727, Kevin Geither at 677, and John Hersey Jr. at 260. On the Republican side of the 15th district ballot, Mary Miller ended with the highest unofficial total with 4,128 votes. She was followed by Vermilion County Treasurer Dan Duncan at 2,891, Kerry Wolf at 334, and Chuck Ellington with 261. The city lists 16,259 voters, with 3,984, or 25%, casting a ballot on Tuesday. The county has 229,408 registered voters, and 8,709, or 29.6%, voted on Tuesday. And now we'll go to the article, "Leaders Urge Shoppers to Stop Panic Buying," by Ben Orner from the Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. As stores' shelves across Illinois empty of key products during the COVID-19 pandemic, Public and private sector leaders are urging shoppers to put less stress on the supply chain by not hoarding items. Since the pandemic intensified in Illinois last week, customers have been panic buying and hoarding products like toilet paper, tissues, hand sanitizer, bread, and pasta. Signs posted on cleaned out shelves ask customers to limit their purchases of such high demand items to a few or even one. But perceived shortages of products are being caused not by a lack of supply, but by a panicked demand. This is an entirely self-created problem, said Rob Carr, president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. There's no shortage, there's no need for hoarding. There's no thoughts of closing grocery stores, he said. Just stick to your normal patterns and there would be plenty for everyone. Illinois Emergency Management Agency Director Alicia Tate Nadeau echoed those concerns during a Monday press briefing. There is no need to purchase dozens of packages of toilet paper at any one time, she said. Let me be clear. Hoarding is irresponsible. Please be considerate to others. Tate Nadeau added that when people hoard food and supplies, they are hurting our most vulnerable neighbors. Please stop buying more than you need, she said. While restaurants and bars are closed to dine-in customers, grocery stores, pharmacies, gas stations, and stores that sell cleaning supplies, pet supplies, and electronics remain open. They're worn out, but they're working hard. They're rising to the challenge, Carr said, of store workers. They're working 24/7 to replenish their stores and keep their stores clean to meet needs. Despite the tremendous stress, Carr said, panic buying and hoarding has put on inventories, he said supply chains continue to work normally. There's absolutely nothing deficient about the supply chain, Carr said. It is working. In fact, it is answering the call. But we would not have to be taking these extraordinary measures if people would shop normally. Illinois' largest group of manufacturers said the same about the flow of products from producer to seller. It is important for Illinois to remain calm and understand that the food supply chain remains strong and robust, Mark Densler, president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, said in a statement on Sunday. Carr said he is working with the Illinois Department of Labor to suspend the state's One Day Rest in Seven Act, which requires workers to have at least 24 hours of rest every week, so that willing employees can work longer hours at distribution centers if they want to get overtime. An IZOL spokesperson did not respond to Capital News Illinois' request for comment. Carr also said he is working with municipalities to suspend overnight delivery restrictions. President Donald Trump's national emergency declaration on Friday prompted the U.S. Department of Transportation to loosen limits on driving hours for American truckers carrying certain types of food and medical supplies and equipment. That's about all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. Stay safe, and thank you for joining me today.